It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is heads. This is tails. New England gets to call the toss.
Heads.
They have called heads. It is heads. New England has won the toss. Elected to receive this end of the field. Good luck.
Sideline. What a throw, Amendola. Brady. Pass is caught. Hogan. Inside the 40. Brady down the gut, pass is caught. Fake it to Hogan, flip it to White, looking for blocks. Getting blocks inside the 20, out of bounds at the 15. On first down, here's Bennett, flag is thrown.
Pass interference, defense, automatic, first down.
Play action. Bennett broken up and Beasley got his left hand on it. Dangerous throw. And that's the play the Falcons have been waiting for. Toss to White. He's in. Patriots win the Super Bowl. Brady has his fifth. What a comeback. 34-28, the final in overtime, and the Patriots have redefined the word momentum here tonight.
All right, so Sandy Rios with you. Did you watch it last night? I actually went to bed at the halftime after Lady Gaga performed. Yeah, I wanted to see, you know, so I could tell you and talk to you about what she did. But the ending, you know, no matter what she might have done, the ending was just amazing. I'm sorry I went to bed. I mean, you heard it at the halftime. I know my husband said, oh, it's, you know, the Patriots are never going to pull this off. It was 28-3 against the Atlanta Falcons. And then you just heard the ending. It ended up being 34-28. And the Patriots won, in case I didn't make that clear. So it was the first Super Bowl to ever go into overtime. You know, that surprised me because I thought that had happened before. Patriots scored 19 points in the fourth quarter, including a pair of two-point conversions. And no, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm reading from a report on Fox. I'm not, you know, I told you, I don't know anything about football, but I do enjoy it. I'm learning to enjoy it more. And, you know, I never said this when the Green Bay Packers were just totally shut out 2 weeks ago. It was pretty disheartening because, you know, at my house, we're Packers fans. So anyway, Tom Brady, the first quarterback to get 5 Super Bowl rings and the first player to win 4 Super Bowl Most Valuable Player awards. So congratulations to the Patriots. Sorry to all you Atlanta fans, but what a night, what a performance. And I think, you know, to me, the thing that was a big relief to me last night was that Houston pulled off a Super Bowl that was where people could actually enjoy football, where it felt like America. It started with this. Let's listen.
Please turn your attention to the North Tunnel and help us welcome 2 very special guests.
President Bush, Mrs. Bush, we're honored that you could join us for the coin toss. Captain, congratulations on earning the opportunity to play in Super Bowl 51. This is the coin that we'll be using for the toss. The Super Bowl logo is heads. The other side is tails. New England is the visiting team. Captain, what is your choice?
Heads.
They have chosen heads. President Bush, would you please toss the coin?
right, so that's the way it went. George Herbert Walker Bush and his wife Barbara wheeled down the center of the football field to do the coin toss. That was very sweet. And then very sweet and very moving. They both looked great, especially since they've been so sick lately. And I think it was just nice to see people show honor, to just show honor. Even if you don't agree with everything he did, I surely, lately, in the last few years, I've disagreed with a lot of what he's done. But he deserved, he was former CIA director, former president, former ambassador to China, former World War II hero, just an amazing, amazing resume, who served his country faithfully, and to the end, you might say. I mean, it's not the end for him yet, but we know his days are numbered. So that was really something. Then Lady Gaga, what did she do? She did nothing. She did nothing except sing. I'm going to play a little clip from one of her songs a little bit later, but thank goodness she held her tongue and did not make it political. And I think many people were relieved. I just thought, what are we going to do if she does that? That just ruins everything. Let's let the American people enjoy football, something that actually does unify them. But I think the left has been after, I made this prediction to my husband quite a long time ago, that I thought the left would go after football with a vengeance because it's kind of a pocket of Americana that's powerful in terms of, you know, spending money, dollars. It's kind of a whole world that is seemed impenetrable, but it isn't, because the NFL has been infiltrated with political correctness, with Colin Kaepernick's antics, and they have, you know, employed with, you know, trying to push political agendas like, you know, gay football players, and trying to make people accept the left's view of sexuality and all of that, and kind of ruining the sport. And I think they've done a good job of that. I think many people would say ESPN has moved to the left. And so I think the left has really been trying to destroy that area of American life. Why? Because the left's goal is to destroy any pocket of resistance, anything normal, in order to take control and make people not have anything really to rally around other than government itself. And so, I mean, that's a simplistic statement, but I think it's actually quite true about what's driving it, even if people involved in it don't fully understand that. I have a lot to tell you, so I better keep moving. The president's executive orders on immigration, of course, were appealed to the Ninth Circuit. You have to know that people in the know call the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco the Ninth Circus. It's been that way for a long time because they are the court that has issued the most radical leftist opinions of any circuit court in the country. And that's been going on for a very long time. And there was a time when we thought we just laughed. Oh, there's the Ninth Circus again. But now, you know, the Ninth Circus is becoming sort of mainstream federal courts. And so the Justice Department, ironically, the Justice Department filled with leftists, people who hate Trump, hate these immigration orders because they are activists, you know, for no borders. But nevertheless, they allegedly filed an appeal to the judge that overturned Donald Trump's executive orders, putting a temporary halt on the refugee program and on bringing in Syrian refugees. Well, at least the lower court appeal, the first appeal has gone down. Now, they didn't listen. And so now we're waiting for another appeal to be heard today. And of course, people are upset. I mean, people who are actually watching this are upset. I have to say that there is so much at stake. I want to read just a couple of things to you. Well, and actually, let's go to this. There are lots of things to share. So let me go to this. There was a U.S. Marine stationed in Iraq who made a video because he must be Special Services. He's a great big buff guy. He's been with Special Services for 10 years. And he made a video that went viral, several million viewers. And this is what he's in Iraq now. And Iraq is one of the seven countries that's on this list to ban immigration. And this is his perspective, U.S. Marine. Let's listen.
I don't work over in the United States. I work overseas. And I'm currently in Iraq, which is one of the countries that were on the list. And there's been a lot of discussion about the executive order. Obviously, in the United States, there's lots going on. And over here, there's a lot going on as well. Just a lot of things you all don't see. So the other morning, we were having a discussion on the executive order. And a lot of the Iraqis obviously showed their displeasure in this executive order. I asked a simple question, and I got an answer to that simple question, and I got it without hesitation. As an American, if I went out in town right now, would I be welcome? And they instantly said, absolutely not, you would not be welcome. And I said, okay, so what would happen if I went out in town? And they said, the locals would snatch me up and kill me within an hour. I'd be tortured first, and after they were done torturing me, I'd probably be beheaded. It would, you know, go on video for everybody to see as, you know, an example. And so I already knew this was going to happen, but I wanted to hear it from them. And, you know, the point I'm trying to make is, you know, this is the local populace that would do this. This isn't ISIS. This isn't Al-Qaeda. This isn't the PMU. This isn't a militia from the Iranians or anything like that. This is the local populace that would do this. My question to them was pretty simple then after that. If you would do this to me in your country, why would I let you in my country? Because all this means to me is that if you have the opportunity to take the life of an American, you would do it. So maybe that's something you all need to think about back there. If this is the way some of these cultures feel, this is the way that these countries feel about Americans, why would you be so naive to believe that if they came to the United States, they would do anything any different than what they would do right here in their own country?
All right, so that was a Marine whose name escapes me in this moment, but he now has been removed. The second video he did was they were removing him because they felt he was in great danger. But his point, Stephen Garner is his name. The point that Iraq is on the list, and of course politicians are going apoplectic. Oh, how can we? We're fighting for them. How can we block Iraqis from coming? And he's just explained what average on the street Iraqis said they would do based on this threat about the travel ban. You know, I also want to. There's an interesting article by Daniel Greenfield, and we should put this on our Facebook page. And the title is "If We Don't Let Muslims in America, They'll Kill Us." And he says, this is part of it, if they'll go off and join ISIS, if we don't let them in, what happens when we do let them in? Why would we want to take in people who express their disagreement with our politics by shooting up a gay nightclub or a social service center that helps the developmentally disabled? When normal people don't like policy, they protest or write a letter to the editor. They don't plant a pressure cooker bomb next to a little boy or stab college students with a butcher knife. Let us in or we'll kill you is the least compelling immigration argument ever. Excellent article. We'll put it on our Facebook page, and it's entitled, If We Don't Let Muslims Into America, They'll Kill Us. And another report that just came to my attention this morning, this is by David Grantham. President Trump's executive order to halt immigration from several Middle East countries comes at the same time Americans are learning of Syrians who may have slipped through the cracks. The Los Angeles Times reports the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security are reinvestigating several dozen Syrian refugees who have already resettled in the United States after derogatory information surfaced that may have disqualified them from entering the country. All right, so the president has admitted, Obama has admitted 15,479 Syrian refugees last year alone, an increase of over 600% from 2015. And the U.S. government has accepted more than 18,000 Syrians seeking asylum since the civil war began in their home country. And on and on and on it goes. Let me just tell you, I'll come back to this. It looks as though over half of Americans, according to, I think it's Gallup poll, favor this ban and this halt. But they're not going to get it because it's going to, the Ninth Circuit's not going to rule in the President Trump's favor. It's going to come back to the Supreme Court, and it's split 4-4. And if it goes then back to the local jurisdiction, it will go against President Trump. This is an impossible situation for all of us. Untenable, really. I'll be back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, that's a pretty neat tractor you got there, kiddo. You know, someday you might find yourself driving a tractor. Of course, it might not seem as fun then.
With age comes wisdom and a firm grasp on the realities of life. If you hold appreciated stock or real estate, you may be concerned about the realities of capital gains tax when you sell your assets. Maybe you've recently sold appreciated property and you're looking for ways to offset your tax liability. Or maybe you're entering your retirement years and you're looking for ways to increase your income for the future. One way would be a charitable remainder trust. With it, you can make a gift of your property to charity, bypass capital gains tax, and make a charitable deduction at tax time. For advice on this, a charitable gift annuity, or several other financial options, contact the AFA Foundation. Our website is afafoundation.net. You can look us up on Facebook or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
In the darkest parts of Mumbai, India's red light districts, all it takes is a little bit of money, and a young girl, maybe as young as 8, is trafficked, her innocence stolen.
They made me sit in one place and they sent a man near me, and then things started happening in the wrong ways and I had no way out.
And it was every single day.
Morning they used to come, afternoon they used to come, evening is the same thing that we used to do. And even if we would express that we were tired or it is hurting us, they would not listen because they have paid a huge amount for us and they would get what they wanted.
But you can make sure it never happens again when you team up with AFR and India Partners. Right here on AFR, we'll show you how your gift of $7.08 provides a day of safety, rescue, and care at a safe house operated by India Partners. So how many children can you rescue? Learn more and give now at AFR.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. I'm still bothered by something that happened at the University of California, Berkeley last week. A grown man attacked a woman during a protest against a conservative speaker, and nothing happened. The poor woman was left to fend for herself. Now, video showed there were plenty of men around, but nobody had the courage to intervene. Now, I'm old school. I was raised to treat ladies with dignity and respect, to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, to offer a seat on a bus or to hold the door open. And if need be, to defend a lady's honor, chivalry. It's not a conservative thing or a liberal thing. It's about doing the right thing. It's about teaching young men to become grown men and to respect ladies. And that lesson should have been delivered to the coward who attacked that woman in Berkeley, preferably with a backhand uppercut or a swift boot kick in the behind. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In case you didn't know, that's Lady Gaga. She was singing last night at the Super Bowl, yes. She didn't say anything about President Trump. I'm very grateful for that. But, of course, interesting to me that she sang this song, I Was Born This Way. No matter gay, straight, or bi, lesbian, transgendered life, I'm on the right track, baby. I was born to survive. This is one of her famous hits, and interesting that she should be singing it in Houston, which has been the center, at least it was a few months ago, 6 months ago, maybe a year, of the battle on transgender bathrooms. And culture has shifted so incredibly, and it's, of course, bled over into public policy, where Christians have paid a tremendous price for simply holding to God's design for marriage and sexuality. We've interviewed so many, you know, Baronelle Stutzman, the florist from Washington State. You know about the couple, the cake bakers from Oregon. We know about the photographers. We know about the pizza shop in Indiana. We know that Christians who have embraced their faith with courage have paid a price. And so one of the things that happened last week, and I told you about it on Thursday, was that an executive order was drafted and then promptly leaked to the left that would protect religious freedoms for Christians. So I want to talk about that because much has happened with it. I don't think it's making headlines, but it should be. And so I've asked Ryan Anderson to join me. He is the senior research fellow at the American Principles and Public Policy area of Heritage Foundation. Ryan first came to my attention when he was just starting at Heritage, and he did a great debate defending marriage, I guess against the British. Now, I just did this off the top of my head, but the British guy. Ryan, you remember that debate, so help me. Who was it?
Piers Morgan, and Piers. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, I remember seeing you do that, Ryan, and I was so impressed, and you were so young, but you did a great job, and now you're growing up. And I don't mean that as a slam, but I mean you're growing into your position, and you've been doing some great writing, and so let's talk about this. This draft of the Religious Freedom Order was circulated at first to the left. The Nation is where I saw it. So who leaked that? I'm just wondering. Do we know?
So far, the media hasn't reported that, and so we don't know. I don't have any inside knowledge into the Trump administration. Well, we don't know who leaked it, but we can tell where it was leaked and where it was first reported, that it looks like the attempt here by leaking it to liberal mainstream media organizations and to LGBT activist groups, that someone was trying to prevent this executive order from actually being issued.
But it has
you
to
don't
be...
leak an executive order of this nature to the opposition unless you're trying to kill it.
And it probably has to be somebody inside the White House, and we won't go any further with our speculations because we can't. There are plenty of leaks going on there right now. It really is distressing. It's kind of an understatement. All right, so do we know now the defense for those that seem slightly embarrassed by this, what you and I probably would agree is a really fine order, and we'll talk about that in just a second. The defense is, people write these orders. All kinds of people submit these kinds of things. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's anywhere close to being signed. Do you know anything about who drafted this? And do you know anything about how far up the chain it actually got?
No, I don't know its origins or how high it got, except for what the media has reported. And the media reported last Friday, I think it was Politico, saying that Ivanka Trump and her husband were the ones that actually intervened to get their father and father-in-law not to rescind one of the bad Obama executive orders. So there are two different executive orders in this general area. One would have rescinded a 2014 Obama executive order that created a special legal status in federal employment and contracting law, protecting sexual orientation and gender identity. And Politico was reporting that Ivanka and her husband, Jared Kushner, got President Trump to not rescind that executive order. The other executive order, the one that was leaked to the media, that's the one that proactively protects religious liberty in a whole host of areas, for hiring, for staffing, adoption agencies, the Little Sisters of the Poor get protection, schools. It's really quite comprehensive, and we can talk about that in more detail. My understanding is that that one is still on the table. That one is, there's still a chance that he will issue this, and I think it's up to the citizens that put him in office to demand that he issues it. He made various promises while he was campaigning, specifically on religious liberty.
All right, so let's talk about, you've already alluded to some of the details, Ryan, but and I did too, I read some of this last week, but we have new listeners, and this is important. This is so important, and I think, you know, it goes without saying, one of the things that's important about it is that evangelicals came out in droves to vote for Donald Trump. because he did speak a lot about religious liberty and how he was going to sort of intimating he would be the champion for Christians who have been sort of the targeted class under the Obama administration and paid a pretty heavy price. So let's talk about the things that are in this executive order that you think are really sterling.
Yeah, so just from the very get-go, it opens by saying that the federal government's going to be respecting the free exercise of religion, and this applies to all people of all faiths in all places and at all times, that it's not just merely the freedom to worship. And this is something that we saw during Hillary Clinton's time as Secretary of State and then John Kerry as Secretary of State, describing the free exercise of religion as merely the freedom of worship. In fact, in her concession speech, Clinton referred to freedom of worship, not freedom of religion. So one thing is, right at the beginning, it says, look, we're going to be protecting religious liberty for all people, all times, all places. And then it goes on to say some specifics. So it says,
Let me interrupt you. I apologize, but let me just make, that's, you know, you and I are used to saying these things. Let me flesh that out just for a second, because freedom of worship limits what we do as followers of Jesus to what we do inside the church or in the privacy of our homes. A freedom of religion is much, much deeper and broader, and those of us that are committed Christians understand that actually our faith in Christ affects everything we think, say, or do, whether it's how we conduct business, whether it's the choices we make in choosing schools or choosing bathrooms, or if we serve in public office, how we execute our role. We do not separate. That the separation of church and state, I don't want to get snagged on this, but let me just say, it never intended for people to set aside their religious conscience in order to perform their public duties. And President Obama's executive order, which I realize is different than this, really was making it impossible for Christians to do business with the federal government. Is that right? Wouldn't you agree, Ryan?
It was making it very difficult if they wanted to be faithful to historic Judeo-Christian teachings about sexuality, and to live out those teachings in their ministries, in their workplaces. And that's actually, so one of the next things the executive order does is it says to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, you need to finally protect the Little Sisters of the Poor and all of the other religious organizations who went to the Supreme Court suing the Obama administration because of the Obamacare contraception and abortion mandate. You know, they've been back and forth. I think there have been 8 different iterations of that mandate from the Department of Health and Human Services. The executive order instructs, hopefully it would be Tom Price, the next secretary of HHS, finally take seriously the religious conscience of the Little Sisters and Wheaton College and of all of the others who have a problem with this executive this mandate and deal with it, respect their religious liberty. And that's particularly there because that's not just the freedom to worship. When the nuns are in the chapel, they're free. But when they're taking care of the elderly, when Wheaton College is running a school, they should also be free to operate according to their beliefs. This executive order would take care of that.
Well, and the other thing we sometimes don't realize, we just don't stop to think how many powers the federal government has to force us to bow the knee. And it can also come in the form of accreditation. For grants, all kinds of things, you can be completely shunned because of your fidelity to your faith on these moral issues, whether it's abortion or God's view of marriage and sexuality. So this thing is very detailed in addressing
the next kind of sections of the executive order specifically mention what you just discussed. It takes language from the First Amendment Defense Act, which is a piece of legislation that candidate Trump promised he would sign into law should he become President Trump. It takes a lot of that language and puts it in an executive order, instructing the federal government not to discriminate against any individual or institution because they believe marriage is the union of a man and a woman. So they can't lose their nonprofit tax status. They can't lose a grant or a contract. They can't lose their accreditation or their licensing. It then also says it includes language from something known as the Russell Amendment, which was debated in Congress a couple months ago. And it says that religious organizations, even if they contract with the government, still get to be religious organizations, which means they get to hire based upon their religion. to keep the religious identity and mission of an organization intact, you need to be able to hire people who share that mission and that identity. This executive order makes that clear that they're allowed to do that. So it's really, it's quite nuanced, and it's entirely lawful. The problem with Obama's executive orders wasn't that he was issuing executive orders. Presidents need to issue executive orders at times. The problem was that he was issuing unlawful executive orders that were exceeding his authority as president. This executive order is entirely within the authority of the president, and it even includes at several points, it says, you know, up to the greatest extent of the law possible, the federal government shall. You know, so it makes allowances for the fact that, look, some cases we're not going to be able to go all the way, but to the greatest extent possible under the law, we're protecting religious liberty. This is a good executive order, and hopefully the president issues it, he signs it, he makes this the official policy of the United States.
Let me just say, Ryan has written a piece kind of clarifying all this, and it was in the Daily Signal just last week. We'll put that on our Facebook page. Mr. President, don't cave to liberal fear-mongering. Protect religious freedom. Ryan, you make the case that this grants freedoms. I'm not using your word, so forgive me. To both groups of people, whether it's Christians with conscience or LGBT citizens, that it's a win-win. Basically, it does not codify discrimination against LGBT, but it also protects Christians. How can that be? We've had this tension between both. How are LGBT persons still protected?
Sure, because this executive order takes nothing away from anyone. What this does is it says that the side that lost the big Supreme Court case a year and a half ago, that they're not now going to be penalized by the government. So think about it this way. 44 years ago, the Supreme Court created a right to abortion. Congress then protected the right of pro-lifers not to have to pay for abortion or perform abortion. A year and a half ago, the Supreme Court created a right to same-sex marriage. Congress, or now an executive order, can protect the right of Americans to continue to live by their belief that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. That doesn't take anything away from other Americans. You know, they're still free to get an abortion. They're still free to be in a same-sex relationship and to have the government recognize it as a marriage. It simply says that minority rights matter as well. And in this case, the minority viewpoint, at least as far as the law is concerned, as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, is the more conservative viewpoint.
You know, I'm sure you saw this, but in the Washington Post, maybe probably from yesterday, was an article titled "Religious Law May Be Coming to America," but it's not Sharia, it's Christian. And in this article, Catherine Rampell talks about, she talks about how terrible this executive order is, and how she says, I could say only a tiny fringe believes Christian practices deserve pride of place in public life and policymaking, but that's not the case. And she talks about how all these rules prefer Christians, and she compares it to Sharia. We are almost out of time, Ryan, but I'd like your comments on that.
Well, I mean, that is ludicrous. I mean, if that is the case, and I've seen various law professors say, oh, this is establishing Christian religion. If that's the case, then the Supreme Court decisions that ruled in favor of the pro-choice position and in the redefinition of marriage established progressive religion. When you have protections for the people whose viewpoint goes against the government's viewpoint, you're not establishing their religion. You're protecting their right to dissent. And so it's really remarkable for mainstream journalists and academics to say that this is akin to Sharia, the establishment of a Christian religion, when all it's doing is protecting Christians' ability to dissent from the government.
Yes, and I might add that Heritage and I think AFA is going to be joining to encourage the President of the United States, Donald Trump, to sign this executive order because it's much needed and long overdue. Ryan, you've certainly done great work on this, and I hope for your sake and for mine too, and for all the people listening to me who are serious followers of Jesus, that this thing passes and a new day begins in terms of our freedoms to exercise our faith. Ryan Anderson, Senior Research Fellow at American Principles at Heritage. Hey, Ryan, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you again soon, God willing, okay?
Yep, thank you.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
We desperately need the light of the gospel to shatter the darkness that is sweeping through our land.
Evangelist Sammy Tippett for Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference.
We're asking Christian leaders to join us in seeking God for a mighty work of His Spirit in this critical hour. I've seen God transform entire nations, places like Romania, where God dispelled the darkness of atheism through the prayers of His people. I want to share with you how God did that and what He can do in our nation. So join me at the Heart Cry for Revival Fusion Conference.
Sponsored in part by American Family Association, the Fusion Conference will be April 23rd through the 27th in the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove in Asheville, North Carolina. Register at heartcryforrevival.org.
The political and cultural landscape of our nation will continue to undergo major changes with the shift in power in our nation's capital. All the issues we care about, religious liberty, the sanctity of life and marriage, national security, immigration, and the economy, will be up for debate. Focal Point will help you process it all from a biblical perspective, live every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 Central on American Family Radio. I'm your congenial, convivial, and amiable host, Brian Fisher, and I approve this message.
The financial world certainly can be intimidating, and our livelihood, of course, depends upon it, but God is in control of all things. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. I take your calls every day and give you answers from a biblical perspective and break down the day's financial numbers to help keep you informed. Financial Issues, every weekday morning at 8 o'clock Central Time and Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Amidst all the legal maneuvering and political posturing about President Trump's executive order restricting immigration, critics seem determined to ignore one key factor. The law is on the president's side. As Commander-in-Chief, Mr. Trump is constitutionally responsible for protecting the country and its people. But there's also this relevant statute found at 8 U.S. Code 1182F. Quote, whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may, by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem to be appropriate, unquote. Mr. Trump's predecessors have exercised such authorities to protect us. So must he. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Hey, some of you may not get the AFA action alerts, and I had just alluded when I was talking with Ryan Anderson about motivating, organizing those of us who are part of this family to encourage the White House to sign this executive order. I can't tell you how important that is. And I can't tell you how much stress the White House is under right now. Just absolutely assaults on every side. And we also know now, you know, that someone inside is leaked transcripts of Donald Trump's conversations with world leaders. You know, they're just people. The long knives are out in every single arena. So the first thing that I'm asking you to do, I'm certainly doing this myself, is whenever you see a story or hear something, and you're hearing it a lot, pray for this administration. Pray for those people that are working around the clock. They're understaffed. We know that, you know, many of the cabinet secretaries who should be in place, including Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, are not there yet. And so they're trying to do some incredible things in a very short time with a very short staff. So pray for their energy, their stamina. I know Kellyanne Conway, you know, tripped up when she talked about the Bowling Green massacre. That actually was a story about two Iraqi brothers there. I remember talking to Patrick Poole about that story when it happened a couple of years ago, but there was not a massacre. She said that. She slipped up. I actually think, you know, it's just fatigue, unbelievable fatigue, long hours, stress, unbelievable. So, and by the way, what happened in Bowling Green was very serious. They were planning terrorist attacks, and I don't want to go on a sidebar on that, but that was a very serious situation with some Iraqi refugees, and the point is still taken, even if there wasn't a so-called massacre. So pray for this president, pray for his staff, and pray for those in the White House, and then also we need to encourage them in any way we can to do the right thing when they are considering doing the right thing, and certainly signing this executive order, really granting what should already be in place, our First Amendment rights to express our faith in every way in our work and our workplaces should be a given, but it isn't. And the Obama administration really came after Christians with a vengeance. Even though Obama continued to claim he was a Christian, I always say you have to look at a man's actions, not at his words. And so his actions showed that he had no sympathy for deeply held religious beliefs on God's view of sexuality or on the issue of life. His views of that, those two things are completely anti-Christian, completely, totally. And so so with that in mind, if you would like to join AFA's team, we've got hundreds of thousands of people all over the country who get action alerts. They don't go out every day. They don't go out every 5 minutes. We use them sparingly. But it helps you to actually practically respond when these things happen. And so I would just suggest, if you have not done this, go to afa.net, afa.net, and sign up to receive the action alerts. And then you can be part of this army of people that respond. And AFA listeners do respond. It's amazing to me. So I hope you'll join us, and let's just have a stronger voice in every way on these issues. All right, I have lots to tell you, so here I go. Protests at New York University got really bad on Friday night. Let's listen.
Get out of here, you Nazi scum!
Several hundred students, many identifying themselves as anti-fascist activists, hurled expletives at police and anyone entering the building where McGinnis was speaking. The protesters themselves were quite vocal.
There's a neo-Nazi speaking, so we're here to protest. That's it.
What about freedom of speech? Hasn't he?
There's a neo-Nazi speaking.
This is freedom of
speech. Yeah. We're practicing freedom of speech.
Shame on you, NYU, was the frequent chant as McGinnis made his way through the crowd. There was a lot of shoving and scuffling, and punches were thrown. Police had to move in, and they made several arrests. I witnessed at least four students being handcuffed. What about the issue of freedom of speech, I asked.
We have freedom of speech in this country. However, if you're going to promote something that is hateful and is hurtful to our democracy, we have a right to come out and explain why our democracy exists and why we should fight against something like this.
Unlike last night's blow-up at Berkeley, police managed to contain this protest to one area, Thompson Street.
Well, I don't think that the issue is protest itself. I think the issue is hearing why we protest.
McGinnis, seen here being heckled inside the NYU building, has a long track record of using incendiary language to attract media attention. He's a Canadian who co-founded Vice Media. The protesters were incensed over what they say he stands for.
All right, so that's enough. That's enough. So Gavin McGinnis is a Nazi. No, he isn't a Nazi. He's like a comedian, and he's a conservative, and that's just not allowed. And so a self-described professor at NYU stood on the street shouting at the police. I've asked the guys to prepare this. They had to, alter it, shall we say. This is a professor from, we think, NYU. That's what she claimed. And this is her attending this protest against Gavin McInnes. Let's listen.
Why are you here? You're not here to protect these students from Nazis. No, you're not. This is completely and these students had to teach them on their own. You should be ashamed of yourself. You should be standing up to those Nazis. You should be protecting these students from hate. This is hate. These are and this is a joke. You're protecting the Nazis. It's a joke. You are a joke. You're grown boys. You're grown boys. And even the black ones. You're grown boys. You're not protecting the NYU students here. And I'm disgusted. I'm a professor. How dare you? How dare you? Neo-Nazis. You! These are kids who are trying to learn about humanity! They're trying to learn about human rights and against racism and xenophobia and LGBTQ rights, and you're letting these neo-Nazis near here! You should kick their You should! You should be ashamed of yourselves! That's it's not up to these students to kick the of a neo-Nazi. They don't have to raise their fists. They were taught to be peaceful. You.
It's coming from a professor.
I'm a professor.
She's a God professor. Hey guys, she's a professor.
You're here to protect the neo-Nazis. So you. Those kids should not have to take fists off to neo-Nazis, and you're putting them in that situation.
Gavin McInnes, of course, is a comedian born in Scotland, a founder of Vice. He is not a Nazi, not any, by any stretch of the words. And so the school had invited him to come in. And when he went inside, somebody pepper sprayed him right in the eyes. You can see that in another video. And that professor, she was yelling at the police. And another part of this, she was calling them proud boys. That's what Gavin McInnes, I guess, I don't know anything about him, to tell you the truth, other than what I've read this morning, has with his radio show and his following. He calls the people, the guys that listen to him, proud boys. And so she's screaming at the police, you proud boys. And then there's a black policeman there, and she said, yeah, you're a proud boy too. Well, we know what that means. We know that that's an insult. And I can't get sidetracked on that either, but this person who's trying to protect the right, whatever she thinks she's trying to protect, is just blasting in the most profane, unbelievably profane language you can imagine. So we can see that the left is really, truly, truly is unhinged on this. There was a cover of a magazine that I got this morning. It's called The Village Magazine. And I believe, as I understand it, it's an Irish publication aimed at the Irish public, the Irish population. I think it's an American publication, but it depicts Donald Trump, picture of his face, and then it has a gun crosshairs right on his head. Not an accident. I mean, just right there on his head. And the big headline is, why not? And then it purports to be an article about why Trump should not be assassinated. But of course, the cover is all about encouraging that. It is absolutely amazing. And if you think the left wasn't unhinged enough, I have to just pick up this other story. One of the women that spoke at the Women's March last week was a woman named Donna Hilton. She was on the stage. She's a beautiful black woman. So here we go. Who is she? Well, now we know. She spent 27 years in prison for participating in the kidnapping, rape, a murder, and ransoming of a gay man. The story is unbelievable. I just read Psychology Today did a whole story about this. And it's so gross. I can't, you know, it's about these three women. She was one of them who kidnaps a gay man, kidnaps him, takes him back to their apartment, and they've got it set up for torture. They starve him. They beat him. They burn him. And the psychologist writing in this article Sounds like a novel, doesn't it? It's an article in Psychology Today. He said, I couldn't believe this girl was so intelligent and nice-looking, could be so unemotional about what she was telling me she and her friends had done. They'd squeeze the victim's, with a pair of pliers, beat him, burn him. Actually, I thought the judge's sentence was lenient. Once a jailbird, always a jailbird. Okay, so 27 years she spent in prison doing that to a gay man, and now she's on the platform blathering about women's rights. Really? The insanity of this movement, the movement on the left, just boggles the mind. And so, and the evil, really, that emanates from it. I'm not saying every person on the left is evil, but I'm saying that at the very heart of it is something really wicked. It has to do with lies and evil and destruction. It's just amazing. And this, you know, this is a milder form. Neiman Marcus now has joined Nordstrom in dropping Ivanka Trump's line of clothing and jewelry. So I'm just telling you, girls, ladies, I'm a Nordstrom shopper. I don't go to Neiman Marcus because I can't afford to buy an island, but I do go to Nordstrom's, and not anymore. I'm going to cut my credit card up and send it back to them. I'm just telling you, I'm sick of this. They have a right to do that, but I have a right to stop shopping there, and I will. I know that we're busy with our lives. People out on the streets. Oh, this is an article that I didn't get for you this morning, but I remember reading it, that George Soros is now paying these college protesters. We have a direct line from his payroll, his foundation, to money, I think it was $50,000, that was spent on one of the most recent demonstrations. And I will find that. And by the way, demonstrations are turning into riots. And you don't have a right to riot. You do know that, right? As American citizens, your First Amendment rights to speak up, and we need them, and I'm glad we have them, to argue, to have discourse, to disapprove. Our First Amendment rights to, fight King George are still in place, but that does not include destruction of property and violence and hurting people and intimidation in the way that we're seeing it. It just doesn't, and something has to be done about this. Well, Trump faces an uphill battle on this immigration order. And the further part of that is, I mentioned to you that Marine, by the way, we'll put his video that went on YouTube on our Facebook page so you can see it. The Marine in Iraq was talking about how the Iraqis there tell him if he goes out on the streets, he will be tortured, beheaded, killed. And they're just regular Iraqis. They're not members of ISIS. And he said, if you think that if regular everyday Iraqis are telling me this, you think they're coming to our country, they're not going to do that in our country? You have to think about this. So now that Marine has been lifted out of his situation in Iraq so that he, I don't know what the details are of that, but shortly after he posted that on YouTube, he was removed. And I think, I'm sure he's probably relieved. I'm sure his family's relieved. So, by the way, 3 congressional IT employees have been fired for accessing members' computer networks without permission. And it is these 3 brothers, Abid, Imran, and Jamal Awan, barred from computer networks at the House of Representatives Thursday. They were assisting 3 members of the Intelligence Panel, 5 members of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, dozens of members who employed the suspects on a shared basis. Members that include, Andre Carson, the Muslim Brotherhood member who's a new member of, he's on the Intelligence Committee. Jackie Speer, both of them on the Intelligence Committee. Tammy Duckworth, also the Intelligence Committee. These 3 brothers, Abid, Imran, Jamal, stealing information. How interesting. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.